what do you call it? The story of Hannah, you know, it says that she went every year to the Beis Hamikdash, and then one year she was mispar. Have you got a give me either mas or a tanach, one or two. No.
Whenever you're the best
physician. Let's call of Ned Hashem, Veli Shemer Espia. Eli was observing her. Vachana Aleph Yud Beis. Shmuel Aleph Yud Beis. Vachana him dabaras al libo raks vaseha nois v'koyla lo yishemaya. That she was speaking to herself and only her lips were moving and you couldn't hear her voice. Vayashiva Eli Lishikara. So Eli thought that she was drunk. Vayomer la Eli ad Moshe tishtakarin. Hasiria seinech me'oloich. How long are you going to be drunk? I mean, you should stop drinking. Atan chanav atayim aloi adayni. Hasiria seinech me'oloich really means you should wait until the yayin loses its effect on it before you mispal. Because tefillah shikr is tayeva. Allah. Tefillah shikr is
Toeva.
Oh, right. Not allowed to. It's
okay.
Despicable. You're not allowed to be mispal.
Right.
Vatan chan avatem aloy adaini. Ishok shasruach anechi. V'yayin v'sheikha loy shasisi. V'eshpech asnafshi lefnei Hashem. So she said no. She says, I'm really a serious woman. I didn't drink any wine or old wine. And I poured out the v'eshpech asnafshi lefnei Hashem. I put up my soul before God. Eli said, go in peace and God blessed her. God should give her a request. So the question, of course, I mean, Chazal and Brachas learn out many halachas from Machana, and so far as tefillah is concerned, that's why tefillah balachas, many halachas learned out from this parak. The only question that always bothered me was, that tefillah really wasn't a new thing. Tefillah dates back to Moshe Rabbeinu. From Vina, I mean, goes at least, right? I mean, tefillah goes all the way back. So, how could it be the Messiah of tefillah goes from Bezdin and Moshe Rabbeinu to Yeshua ben Nun? I mean, there's a Messiah in Yadis. It's not just people that just come up with new ideas, new things, new entities. So how is it possible that Chana should suddenly come along and make a new way of davening? I mean, they never davened the way before. She's who is she to make a new way to daven? Do you know what I mean? Uh-huh. You know what I'm asking? I mean, it's an odd thing, right?
Sure.
I mean, I thought she was sick. I mean, it's apparently a whole way of a new way of davening. I mean, it's not, davening has to be comes from Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, we Jews didn't forget how to daven. Davened all the years. Davened straight through the time Moshe Rabbeinu always kept davening. So I could be a new chiddush like that. All right. Then more, I'd like to define a little more precisely what was Chana's revision? What was her chiddush in tefillah? It was a chiddush in tefillah accepted by Chazal. So apparently, I mean, it wasn't just an emotional thing. I mean, it was a chiddush in tefillah. What exactly was it? Precisely, what was it? Yes. Chana's halacha really is like this. See, actually, why did Eli get upset about it? He got upset. He got angry. Moshe tishtakaren, a serious enech me'olach, he accused her. He was very bitter about her. I mean, he spoke as a serious offense. So what's the pshat? The pshat is like this, that the halacha of Oymed betfilah is Oymed lefnei Hashem. That's the essence of tefillah. Like Reb Chaim says, I mean, that's clear, that the essence of tefillah is Oymed lefnei Hashem. V'avram o'edeno Oymed lefnei Hashem, Pasuk says. It means mispal. Okay, so Amid Lefnei Hashem, right? Yeah. So, the thing is that in Amid Lefnei Hashem, there are certain halachas of kavod that you have to, that are neig. Like Amid Lefnei Melech. In order that a person should have the awareness that he's, that's why even begotten, the way he dresses, Yitzayin, lo elom Yitzayin adam es atzmai, vach kach yisbao. Right? A person should before he davens, he's supposed to, you know, make sure his jacket is right, his tie is right, straighten out the way it looks. Why? Because that halacha gives a person the awareness that is Amid Lefnei Melech. All these halachas are implemented to give him the awareness, to make him know what position he is, what the real tefillah is, what tefillah is. But the thing, so therefore, Eli held that it is not proper for a person to speak in a way that's not becoming a melech when you speak to Hashem. See? Because of the halacha of Vayamid Lefnei Hashem. So therefore, he held that when a person talks, a person should speak normally. You should speak in a way that should be audible. It should be wouldn't be proper to go in front of a melech and start talking in a way that the mumble jumble, he can't hear you. The melech has to come and bend down and listen to you. And this is not covered, not derech covered. So all the, of course, regard to relation to God, it doesn't make any difference, of course, in terms of the, but it makes a difference in terms of the person's performance. That he should perform in a way that is befitting the highest degree, at least, of human covet. So you should have the awareness of Hashem. That's the idea. That's all the idea. That's halachas over there. So Eli said, this is not proper. How could she misspell like that? That's why nobody was misspelled like that, because that was considered ve'achshavei eli shikara. Only a person who's shikar talks like that. And apparently, I would assume also, ve'achshavei eli shikara indicates that her mannerism was not becoming. In other words, it was obvious from the way she was being misspelled that she lost herself. She was like lost. You see? So that was Eli's taina. What was her taina? She said no. Ishok shas ruach anechi. V'eshpech es nafshi lefnei Hashem. What is v'eshpech es nafshi? V'yam shech v'shis v'eshpech es nafshi lefnei Hashem. What does it mean v'eshpech es nafshi lefnei Hashem? It means that the reason why my appearance is so unbecoming is not because I am intentionally being disrespectful, but the reason is because of my kavanah salev. My kavanah salev is so great that it simply overtook my whole being, and I was unaware of the way I appeared and how I was talking. I was unaware of myself. You know what I mean? V'ashpech es nafshi Hashem means that the kavanas alev resulted in her not being able to make her voice audible.
V'ashpech es what?
V'ashpech es alev, that's what she said. So she argued with Eli. She said that since tefillah is avodah shebelev, it's true it's avodah Hashem, but essentially it's avodah shebelev, anything in the act, in the performance of tefillah, which results from kavanas alev, can never be considered a lack of kavod. You see? It overrides all considerations of kavod, because the essence of tefillah is avodah shebelev. So that was her argument. But that was her counter argument to Eli. And Eli apparently agreed, because it says v'yan Eli v'yam elachi l'shoim. See, so the Negev and Chazal learn all the halachas from Chana. That's why we say, that's why we daven bedavka b'lachash, to demonstrate that. That's to demonstrate that halacha, that the kavanah salev is zikr. The kavanah salev is zikr. That kavanah salev is overriding all considerations. I want to bring a few riots for that. You all know is known. But they used to daven in a way that was audible because of the halacha of Amid Lefnei Hashem. It dictates logically that. How many people get lost in kavanah to the point where, hey, that's a tremendous level of kavanah. She was unaware of the way she was being misfouled. So she was the first one out of the case. So that's why she said that's the most overriding principle. She would not shut the Masara was lost. No, Masara was lost. It was a halacha question, just like all the time in Gemara, all the time in Chazal. How do you have a new halacha comes up, a new situation arises, and there's two possible theories. The same thing over here. That was the thing with her. Halacha is that if you are mechaven better, out loud, in other words, when you verbalize it loudly, halacha is you should verbalize it loudly, even tefillah b'lachash. So Reb Chaim used to always daven loud, because he says that for him it was better to be mechaven. But why is that the case? What kind of sense does it make? If the right way is balachash, why is that way? The answer is because that's precisely what she was, that's precisely her halacha was, that the kavanas alev in performance overrides all the other considerations. It's precisely the halacha. That's why if you mechavim better out loud, so you should daven out loud, you know what I mean? And another right I want to bring is like this. The halacha is you're not allowed to change your position in tefillah. Like the Rav one time mentioned, he says that the chazanim on Yom Kippur, so they want to have room, you know, they're standing by the bima, you know, by Yomit actually, and they want to do Kurim. So what they do, so they go like this. Stand by the Yomit, you know, like this, stand over here, and then when they want to go, they go. They jump. I remember as a kid, I used to see the chazanim, the old chazanim used to do that.
Yeah.
They used to jump back, because they wanted to do Kurim. There's no room over here, right? They can't move the whole bima. Sometimes. Yeah. Jumping in the middle of the talk. So the Rav said that he asked his father, he said, this is crazy. Because it's not the halacha about you have to keep your, not only the halacha, you have to keep your feet together. The halacha is not allowed to change your position in Torah. You know what I mean? Jumping around a room in the middle of davening is not the right thing to do. Now I'll do it. It says that they found that they went from one, they found only to start out on one side and needs to finish on the other side.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
If you keep your feet together and you don't move, it's not going to happen. You don't wind up. That's right. It's Newton's third law. I mean, you have to have that's Newton's first law.
Newton's
first law. An object at rest stays at rest. Stays at rest.
But the keeper jumps around.
Pressure on the ground.
The keeper jumps
around. There's pressure back on you.
But the keeper jumps
right?
around.
Action and reaction.
What's the command for the keeper?
Out of the room. So the answer is because of Chana's law. The kavanas halev overrides, and the performance of tefillah overrides all considerations. That was Chana's halacha. Halacha is, of course, the reason why you put your feet together is because you made like a malach l'shamayim. You know, malachim is a veraglam regli yashara. That's the reason. Ah, regli yashara. So one. So, but that's only that. All those halachas are created for to bring across the concept of emet lifnei Hashem, but it never is deicha. The avodah shebelev is deicha. All those halachas. Kavanas halev is deicha. That was Chana's halacha. Okay. Why it is that on Rosh Hashanah, as much as you have Malchias and Zachareinis and Zachareinu L'chaim and everything in Shofars, but you do not have anywhere any Vidui. Right? No Vidui. Hashem, no Bagan. As a matter of fact, many people would not, you're not allowed to say the first Avinu Malkeinu. Chatan L'fanecha, because Chatan was Vidui. So they skipped the first Avinu Malkeinu. A lot of Gedolim held that way. So you're not allowed to have any Vidui in Rosh Hashanah. The question arises, I mean, it seems so odd, doesn't it? I mean, it seems so so out of place with the whole idea of Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, first of all, Rosh Hashanah is one of the SRS made tshuva. It has to be 10 days of tshuva. I mean, you can't count 10 if you take away Rosh Hashanah, especially 2 days. And 2 days is not for Sfeg Yama, so you have to go for 8 days. So that you don't find. The first, definitely everybody refers to Rosh Hashanah as the first day of SRS made tshuva, right? And nevertheless, there's no tshuva. Why shouldn't there be tshuva in the den of tefillos? And it's a funny thing, isn't it? And you can tell one thing you know from Chazal.
Is there tshuva at all?
Funny thing. Moreover, you know one thing you know, that this was not haphazardly done. This was deliberate. That's obvious. And it was deliberately omitted by Chazal, this tshuva. The question is, why do they see fit to omit it? So some say, because the Chazal say, batuach badin, which is very nice, but it's a hard concept. But Tuach Badin is not a talk that is associated with tshuva, because it's asar shmei tshuva. You have to do tshuva anyways in Rosh Hashanah. Somebody asks you, you have to do tshuva in Rosh Hashanah? Certainly. The Rambam says, asar asiyam elu, this is this man that HaKadosh Baruch Hu kiru Hashem b'matzo, dir Hashem b'matzo. Right? Oh. So what's the pshat? I think pshat is like this. That really, there definitely is a chiyuv tshuva on Rosh Hashanah. But why is it omitted from this tefillah for one reason? Really, the tefillahs, like the Rav said once, that the tefillahs are part of Kedushas Hayom. The Kedushas Hayom of Rosh Hashanah is Malchias. That's clear. Malchias is the essence of the day. Because you say Malchias and Kiddush. Melech HaKol Oretz Mekadesh Yisrael V'yam Zekan. Right away, the Rav held the right Nesach is supposed to be Udvarcho Malkeinu Emes V'kayim La'ad. Why? For a simple reason. Because the Gemara says Me'ein Chasima Samach LaChasima. And the Chasima is Melech, is the essence of the Chasima. And the way on Nesach, you don't have a Melech in it. It says Udvarcho. It's very nice, but where's Melech? See? That's why it says the rightness is Kiatolakim Emes Udvorcha Malkeinu Emes Vakayim La'ad. Brach Dorashe Melech HaKalaz Mekashi Shavu Yom Zikar. After Malchis. Malchis is the essence. In Kiddush also you'll say Melech HaKalaz. So Malchis is the essence. Melech HaKadosh, you skip it. Malchis is the essence of the Kiddush Hayom. It's the concept of Malchis. See? Ah. Now, even Zechariah and Shafer is only a Musaf, and Shachar Shion says Zechariah. We're not possible to do Balamar. Shachar Shion says Zechariah and Shafer. It's Ma'ariv Yon Seif. It's Kedush Shoyim, you have to Malchis, you have to have. So things like this. That, what's the Pshat? What is Malchis really? Malchis is a total recognition that God is the reality behind all realities that we see. He's the source of all realities, and His law is the immutable law. See? We stand in awe of this recognition. We recognize that God is the source, the reality of all realities, and everything that comes from Him is an immutable law. Then man has to realize that he has to fit into that law. He can't get carried away with his own ideas. I mean, there's a reality here that he can't buck. The reality behind reality is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we have to fit ourselves into that reality, rather than to a person gets carried away, thinks he has his own world. So things like this. So the Malchias means standing in awe of this recognition. Now tshuva, that's the kedusha yom. Tshuva is a personal, is a process of personal, let me say, rehabilitation. All right, bad word to use, but you know what I'm saying. It's descriptive. All right, it's a personal process that an individual undergoes of improvement. Okay, all right. Now the point of this: any personal improvement on Rosh Hashanah would detract from the Malchus. That's the shot. Malchus is where the person is standing in awe of the Creator. That's Malchus. When you're standing in awe of God, you can't say, well, let me see, I'd like to improve myself now. That is a tata de sasri, because it shows a lack of the sense of Malchus. Malchus demands that there's no other considerations. You see? That's why tshuva has to be omitted. Now, even though, so therefore, the pshat is like this. The tefillahs represent the kedushas hayom, the essence of the day. If the essence of the day is Malchus, then you can't have tshuva in the tefillahs. On Rosh Hashanah, should you do tshuva in Rosh Hashanah? Yes, but it can't be in the tefillah. Why can't it be in the tefillah? Because the tefillah would take away from the Malchus, because the Malchus is where the person is totally lost in the awe. And the tshuva is where on Hashem Chatasi starts reflecting about himself. He's far away from this. You have to have, of course, it's a prerequisite. Malchus is a prerequisite for tshuva. Because what are you doing tshuva about? Malchus means he recognizes God, his recognition of God, and then the tshuva is, he sees how he is, how far, that's why tshuva is always Ono Hashem. Why Ono Hashem? Must be Ono Hashem, we said last year. Ono Hashem is because it's returning to God. It's returning to God because he recognizes that God is a reality and how far he's deviated from this reality. So he has to come back. That's really tshuva, come back to that reality. Because initially man comes from that reality, his very being is from that reality. Now he comes back to, he comes back intellectually to that reality, to live according to it. So tshuva is a result of Malchus. But you can't have it, Simon, if the essence of the day is Malchus, the tshuva is the type of the sasri. That's why you can't have it. You see? That's the pshat. Zichreinus you can have. Because Zichreinus is all a part of Malchus. Recognition of his that he remembers, he does all those things. There's no tata de sasri in relationship to anything that has to do with God, that he's zecher abris, that he should remember us. Even tefillah also is malchus. There's only one thing that would be tshuva would be a tata de sasri. Why would tshuva be a tata de sasri? Because it means that a person has to take time to undergo a process, to introspect and undergo a process. That's a deep, no introspection. See, introspect and undergo a process. That means you're taking out time. Now I'm going into a new field. That you can't do in the malchus.
How about your first?
The basic fact. It doesn't deal directly with the subject. It's not directly dealing with the subject of tshuva or Rosh Hashanah. It's not directly dealing with that, but you'll see there is a connection, indirectly. In other words, one of the main ideas will be something which is very pertinent to Inyan HaDiyoma. All right? Are you all familiar with the parasha of Yifas Tor? With the base, I'll just give you, all you have to know is really the basic idea. That's in the beginning of Kisete, that it says when the Bnei Yisrael go out to a Milchemes Rishus, because there's two kinds of Milchemes Mitzvah. Basically, Milchemes Mitzvah is a war of defense or a war against the conquest, the seven nations that inhabited Eretz Yisrael. But a Milchemes Rishus is a voluntary war. And then, at the time of the captivity, when they're victorious, during the time of the captivity, so it says if a person will see amongst the captives a Gentile woman and he has a desire for her, so then he could take her for a wife. Well, there's all different procedures that he has to take her to his house, and she has to let her nails grow and cut her hair. There's all kinds of arguments. In other words, it's a different procedure. But the point is, the Torah was matir. Whether it was matir be a Rishona or whatever, then afterwards he could take it for a wife. But the Torah was matir in this case, something that ordinarily would be usher, to take a Goyisha woman. All right, that's all. I don't want to get into all the particulars, because that doesn't really concern us as far as this is concerned. All right? So in this situation, the Torah, if he has a desire for her, the Torah was matir that he could take a Goyisha woman. So of course the question arises, why? Why the Torah matir this over here? Something which ordinarily a person would not be allowed to do. All right, so the famous Rashi over here, Chazal. Rashi says, "V'lakachta l'chol isha." It's the beginning of Kisetei. Lo divra Torah ela kineged yetzer hara. The Torah only spoke against the yetzer hara. What does it mean? The Torah only spoke against the yetzer hara. Imena kadosh baruch hu matira if God would not be matahar, yisa'ena b'isser, then he would marry her b'isser. In other words, if you tell him that he can't do it, so he would do it anyways. And then he'd do it b'isser. Okay? Alright, so that's that point. In other words, so therefore Rashi explains that the reason, the underlying reason over here, is that it's some kind of a special situation. That you see that really the Torah would prefer that he didn't marry her, right? But due to the nature of the situation, the Torah like couldn't do anything about it. If we're going to tell him no, he's going to do it anyhow. Apparently he can't control himself for some reason. So since we know that he's going to do it anyhow, it's preferable that he does it within the framework of the Torah. I'm not going to go into that point, why it's preferable to do it this way rather than that I'm sure at least basically you have an understanding about that. It's better that he do it within the framework of the system. He's not breaking the law. But that's not the main point over here. Then Rashi goes on like this. Avolim nasa, but let's say he did go ahead and marry her. Sofo liyais sena. In the end, he is destined to hate her. He's going to hate her. He's going to wind up hating her. How do you know that he's going to wind up hating her? Well, you have to understand that there's three parshios, one after the other. In Kiseite. The first is the parsha of Yifas Toar, right? Which tells us about this basic law. Then is the next parsha. What's the next parsha after that? That's right. Shtei Nashim, the parsha of Nachlois. As soon as this parsha is finished, the next one is Kisiyen Aliyah Shtei Nashim. A man will have two wives, Achas Ahuva v'Achas Nua. One is one he loves and one he hates. And then they have children, you know, both of them. And the whole thing is that the Yerusha goes to the Ben Abchor, even if it's the son of the Snua, and so on and so forth. But you see, right after this parsha, you have the parsha of the hated wife, right? So what's the connection? Why did the Torah place this parsha next to the parsha of Yifas Toar? What's the parsha after that? The third parsha is what? The parsha of Ben Sorer Umora. Are you all familiar basically with Ben Sorer Umora? Ben Sorer Umora is the rebellious child. The child who rebels against the words of his parents. And he doesn't listen to them. He rebels against them. I see it's a familiar topic. And I say, again, there's a whole... all kinds of laws, what he has to do. He steals, he drinks wine, all kinds of particulars. And the Torah has the death penalty. The Torah has the death penalty for that child. Although the truth of the matter is that Chazal say... that lehayiv lenivra. In other words, practically speaking, this death penalty was never really, it wasn't practical. The Torah just, see, in some cases, the Torah has certain ideas, certain laws, right, which are created in such a way that they will never be practically fulfilled. Except why is the Torah, in other words, why does the Torah have a death penalty basically for something which is not going to be fulfilled? Because, elulmoy de lakav el schar. In other words, it's to teach us certain ideas. We're supposed to learn this parsha and get the main ideas and apply it to our situation. So the Torah is telling us that the Ben Sorer Mora is Chayav Misa. That means to say that type of life is inherently, it's worthless, has no purpose whatsoever. So it's Chayav Misa. But in practice, of course, it can never be carried out. You see what I'm saying? Alright. So therefore you have three parshiyos. You have the Yifas Toar. You follow? That's followed by the hated wife. And that's followed by the rebellious child. So Chazal already saw that there must be a certain connection between the two. Between the three. What's the connection between the three parshiyos? So Rashi is like this. If the first... this is the, yeah. So for Liyai Saina, in the end he's going to hate her. Why? Shenemar Achrev Kisiyen Alesh. Because it says in the very next parsha, a man will have two wives. One is beloved and one is hated. You see? So there's a connection between the two. And what's the next result? The Sofo... Laholid bimena ben sora mora, and in the end he's going to have from this woman, right, a rebellious child. Why? Lekachnis mechul parshas alol. In other words, that's the reason for this connection. The reason for this connection is to teach us that there's a certain sequence of events, a certain pattern over here. The pattern is that first you marry a yifas tayar, right? This will inevitably result that he will hate her. And the third event in this series is that they will produce a rebellious child. Alright? So basically we have, how many questions do we have to really deal with over here? What are the basic questions? What about the idea of Lo Dibra Torah Keneged Yetzer Hara? Forget about the connection. That idea itself. What are, in other words, is that something that we just accept, or are there any questions we have on that?
I went to Torah Matzah.
Special. What's so unique about this particular case? Right? That the Torah is Matir. Well, you want to know, in other words, and that is, what is there about this particular situation that causes this tremendous need that the Torah has to be Matir? You follow what I'm saying? In other words, what is there in this situation of victory when they've won the war that all of a sudden he's in a certain state where he couldn't be refused? What caused it? You follow what I'm saying? That's different than your question. All right. Is there any other questions now about the idea of like the Torah situation in the Torah where you could apply the same idea of like the Torah, El Kenegi Torah?
The Slav, every single
right? Which the Torah permitted only because of the nature of man, right?
By meat,
for example, right? Chazal say that a person shouldn't eat meat all the time, right? Why? Because it's taiva. So you see the basic purpose of the Torah, right, is to elevate a person to a higher level, right? That he shouldn't be on the level of his taivas. Ah, except, but the Torah was matir certain things, right? Torah was matir certain things. All areas of the taivas. In other words, the real philosophy is a person should separate himself from these things. Except, we know that it's impossible to be totally said the Torah was matir. All the various taivas, the Torah, certain situations, the Torah was matir. So why don't we say in all those cases, like different Torah, can I get a Torah? No, the same thing with Torah. Why was the Torah? So I'll say that you have series over here. That he's... Chazal says there's a certain sequence, a certain series. That first he will marry her, then he will hate her, and then... Now, are these just predictions? Or is this based on certain insights, in other words? There must be some underlying causes over here. There must be some relationship. Now, on the surface, we don't really see what they are. I mean, it's not immediately apparent. Doesn't make why she wind up. As a matter of fact, he says that he's attracted, he likes her, he loves her. Why should he wind up hating her? And why should this produce, even if he does wind up hating her, so why does it produce a Ben Saramara? You see? There must be certain insights over here that have to be uncovered. All right. Okay. First question. Okay? About the Ladibrata Elkinekide Tahara. It says Gemara in Medarim. Daftes Amud Beis in Medarim. It's about Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon said, Miyamai Leachalti Asham Nazir Tame Ela Echad. In other words, he said in his life he would never eat the Asham, the carbon of a Nazir Tame. If a Nazir, in other words, became Tame, he didn't keep his nazirus, so he has to bring an asham. He said he would never eat from it. But the Gemara explains later on, because the general reason why he wouldn't eat from it. Because in general, in other words, he held that a lot of times a person, the Torah prescribes, you know what nazirus is, right? The person abstains from wine and he lets his hair grow, right? Ah. Now, so in other words, the person is taking upon himself more restrictions than he has to.
From
Yeah. Now, a lot of times he holds that a person is doing it out of a certain fit of guilt. You see? It's just an emotional thing. And all of a sudden he wants to try and change himself completely to go to the other extreme. And he held that that's not the correct way. It's impossible for a person to change that way. I mean, you see, in today's society, a lot of people try and do it. All the night they try and become big tzaddikim. And Yadish, you can't do that because it's got to be through an increase, it's got to be step by step, and it has to be through an increase in your knowledge, understanding. That's the only kind of genuine change there is. The person just changes overnight, that's not a real change. That's just a fit. A certain emotion overcame the guy. What's going to happen is that he's going to change. You see, you can't keep up with it, and eventually it's going to wear off. That's why he wouldn't eat normally from an asham of another tummy. Except one exception. What was the case? Pamachas ba'odam echad nazir min adarim. One time a Nazir came from the south. Ve'isiv shehu yifei nayim v'tev rei. Uketzeisav sdurais lai taltalim. And he saw that he was a very good-looking person. Nice eyes and his hair. And my hair was arranged neatly in locks. In other words, that must have been the style in those days. But the general idea is that he saw he was a very handsome person. Amarti lo. I said to him, Bini, Mara Isa Lahashkis Esarecha Zehanoe. Why did you see fit to destroy such beautiful hair? In other words, why did you become another? Amarli, he said, Roe Haisi La'aba B'irai. I was a shepherd for my father in my city. Halachti L'malais Mayim Min Ama'ayin. I went one time to bring up water from the well. V'nestakalti B'babua Shali. U'pachaz Alai Yitzri. U'bikesh L'tardeni Min Ha'ilam. In other words, he saw an image of himself. He saw an image of himself in the water. And all of a sudden his Yetzer, his evil inclination, his Yetzer grabbed a hold of him and wanted to destroy him from the world. In other words, he wanted him to go and lead a sinful life. And I said to him, in other words, I said to my Yetzer Hara, Russia, wicked one, Lam Atim is Gabi Yerlam Shani Shalach. Why are you so misguided? Why are you so haughty? In a world which is not yours. B'mishu asid liyais rima v'tayleya. And one who is destined to be rima v'tayleya. In other words, one who is destined to be worms. In other words, one, you know, when a person's in the grave is going to be decomposed, right? So he said at that particular point he decided that he's going to cut off his hair and he's going to become a nazir. You follow? Yeah, you understand the thing? In other words, right? There's something that's a little bit strange about it. What is difficult about this story? What caused him to want to sin? Desires, drives, instincts? It's the typhus. I mean, isn't the usual, of course, that you have to have other factors. I mean, you need a certain situation in the external world. But isn't the source of the drive is internal? I mean, what did he have to do, right? That's something, in other words, that a person perceives, that he feels. Why did he have to see his image in the water first to have this desire? What does that have to do with it? I mean, what does seeing your image all of a sudden create a Yetzirah, a Taiva? Either it's there or it's not there. See? His argument was, Losh Elam Atem is Gaiva. You see? Ba'olam Sheinu Shalach. You see? If it was really Taiva, except now he saw that he could fulfill it, so then he should have been saying something to do with Taiva. Why are you bringing up this something that has to do with Taiva? He should have rebuked it because of Taiva. Here he's rebuking it because of Gaiva. Lam Atem is Gah. Ba'olam Sheinu Shalach. What does Gaiva have to do with it? You have to understand. Shh.
Repeat the question.
The question? See, normally, especially if you're familiar with the, some of you went through it, some of you didn't, you'll go through it during the course of the year, but one of the results, in other words, of the Chet of Adam was the creation of a superego, right? God created a new force in man to control the Taiva. Now, what is that? That's the ego ideal, you see? In other words, that a person has desires, right, the instinctual, but what holds them in check? The fact is that he has a certain image of himself that's called the ego ideal, right? And that prevents him. He has to live up to that. When he can't live up to that, he feels guilt, he feels shame, right? In other words, each person has a certain image of himself. It's called the ego ideal. Okay, so the image of himself, the ego ideal, when it's the correct one, when the ego ideal is aligned with the proper ideal of life, so then the person is prevented from sinning because this mechanism constantly checks him, constantly watches him. You see? Now what happens is like this. I tell you, one of the main things that people are going after, see, when people lead the Taivish life, you see, it's not the Taivish per se that they're really attracted to. But what are they really going after?
Image.
It's a new image. It's a new ego ideal. You see? It's the ego ideal of the Taivish life. That's what you have, like the playboy, you see? It's a whole image. It's not this particular enjoyment or that particular enjoyment. But it's the entire image. It's a new ego ideal. You see? That's what you have in our whole society over here. The jet setters, the beautiful people, right? The people admire them and follow. They're interested in every little thing they do. What's that tremendous thing over there? What are they so interested in? You see? because it's a new that's what the people are struggling for. And they're not going after, you see, like you have the beautiful people, the jet setters. When a person wants to live like that, it's not because he wants to have this pleasure, that pleasure. Most of the pleasure they have, you can have too. You see? But it's being part of a certain image, certain ego ideal, and that's the ego ideal, the macho man. That's the whole kind of that's exactly what it is. You see, no one understands this more clearly than who? Than the advertiser. Right? Yeah. In other words, in all the advertisement, they don't show you the product and the function, etc., etc. It's the whole a car, whether it's a car, whether it's a cigarette, whatever it might be. You see? Then, as a matter of fact, at one time, so you see that they're selling the image. It's not the price, it's not the particular. You see? So, as a matter of fact, just briefly, I remember a discussion with one fellow that one time went to the yeshiva. And he was a terrific guy, a brilliant guy. But he had come from not such a religious background. He wasn't really, he didn't keep the system. So he had a conflict because he knew if he had to stay in the yeshiva, he had to keep the Torah. So I had long discussions with the guy, and we focused in on all different kinds of questions. He had philosophical questions and then practical questions. And the guy loved skiing, so I mentioned skiing because it had the gears. He was saying no, because he had come from a pretty wealthy background, and the guy's not in the yeshiva anymore. He had come from a pretty. That's because he decided to go skiing. He was used to going on skiing trips and all these different tivus. He says could be a tremendous conflict, you know, like I love skiing and all that. I mean, if I become from, so I said, why can't you go skiing if you're from? I mean, there's nothing in the Yadis that's against skiing. So he says, well, he says, you know, when you're up there and in the lodge and everything and everybody's sitting around, hot dogs, you know, weenies and that. So I said, so you have your kosher food. I mean, I know what he's getting at. You know, like it's treif there. So when you go, you take your food and you eat separately. Like, and all that. I see it bothered him. Then he says, yeah, but don't forget on Saturday afternoon they go out and they go skiing and everything and I can't. So I said, so Shabbos, you stay in your room, you read, you know, you read something or whatever and you go your skiing on Sunday. I mean, practically speaking, I showed him for every tina that you can have it, you know. Then I finally realized what was wrong. So I told him, you're not really, he wasn't satisfied with all this, you see. I said, because you really don't care about the skiing for today. If all you cared about was the enjoyment of skiing per se, there'd be no problem, because you'd find a chance and time to go skiing. But for you, skiing is part of a whole ideal. It's part of an image, you see? Being with that group. So that's why these things bother you. Because if you have to keep halacha, you can't feel that you're part of that group. Because the group, they sit around the fire, and they have the weenies, and it's all one package. You can't isolate these different things. And you're mufka from that thing. So therefore, you can never have that feeling of that image of being that type of person. And then I explained it to him. He said, that's it. There's no question about it. That's the thing over here. In other words, what gets a person is not the taiva per se. We one time explained it, remember a few years ago, when it says by Yitzchak, Vayish, that Yitzchak became very great. Remember that? So Rashi says that he became so great that people said, they'd rather have Zevel Pardaisav, Shal Yitzchak, the Zevel Pardaisav, the dung of his animal, rather than Kol Kaspei V'Zohav, Shal Avimelech. Rather than all the Kesev V'Zohav of Avimelech. Alright, so we analyzed the whole thing, but one point you remember. Why does it say Shal Kol Kaspei V'Zohav, Shal Avimelech? Why does it simply say Shal Kol Kaspei V'Zohav, Shal Ba'olam? Why Shal Avimelech? See? I think it was a commercial one time. It's better than Rockefeller's money. See, people refer to Rockefeller's money. Why money? You see? The answer is because people don't associate money per se. Money is part of an image, part of a lifestyle, part of an ego ideal. You see? So Rockefeller represents that thing. In those days, Avimelech represented the ideal of the title, you see? So it's not just Kesef Azov, but Kesef Azov, it's all what? It's all attached to the idea of a certain ego ideal. That's Avimelech. That's the pshat over here. You see, what happened over here when he saw his image of himself, until this time, of course he had typhus, but the typhus weren't the thing that got him over here, because he also had something else. He had an ego ideal, you see, and the ego ideal would hold down the head. What happened over here when he saw his image was that he saw he was a real handsome guy, you see. So then then he obtained at that particular moment the whole new ego ideal of being a swinger or a playboy, that type of thing. Oh, once he had that ego ideal, then he was in trouble, you see? Because then the agency that normally protects the person, right, that holds his id in check, now it was Fakir, it was pulling him in the other direction. That's the pshat. That's why he, now we understand the rebuke. Rasha lama atam is ga. What was the nature of the rebuke? How did he rebuke? Why are you haughty in a world which is not yours with one who is going to be dust and worms? What was, you know, how did that affect him? How did that get him out of the problem over there? Like this. A person's ego ideal has to be something which is permanent, which is real, which is strong, you see? And as he's saying that this is crazy. This ego ideal is nothing. You don't have the control, right? It doesn't have any permanence. See, in other words, a person has to attach himself. When a person attaches himself to something, it's got to be something which in his own mind he can feel is really permanent, is really secure. Everybody wants security. They want permanence. You see? That's why most people attach themselves to money, because they feel that money is something which is permanent. You see, it'll always be there, and if not then, they can leave it over. But the ego ideal had to be one, right, which he could feel had some permanence to it. See, that's why he says, Olam Shein Shalach, you have no control. In a few years, what happens? In a few years, you're going to be old, and you lose your strength, you lose your desires. It's ridiculous. It's not an ideal. You see? That's what he tried to do. In other words, he had to break down that ego ideal with the argument that it's crazy. It's not for real. It's got to be something. An ego ideal has to be something which has some basis in reality. I mean, a person can get a crazy ego ideal. It has no basis in reality. It can't last. That's how he broke it down. It's the false ego ideal, you see, because God gave us something which can control it. But when that force itself becomes distorted, then a person is lost. That's all. The Gemara is telling you how he broke it down. It appears from his rebuke that it was because of this factor of permanence, you see, that without the factor of permanence, he couldn't attach it to reality. Alright, that's it. I don't want, you know, there's no point to to the case of Yefas Tayaf. How does this help us? What is so special about Yefas Tayah? I never understood. We were working on this problem for a long time. What happens by Yefas Tayah? I was always wondering about that. Like, all of a sudden, you must assume the guy's a tremendous Taiva, right? That he can't ordinarily control. So we try to, where does it come from? The thing is like this. So, just briefly, I can never really understand why in this particular situation a person's Taiva should suddenly increase. I mean, a person has been fired. Usually a person is, it's a time when a person is under strict discipline, under control. I mean, wartime, right? Subduing the types. Why all of a sudden would his title become so great? The answer is that that's not the correct approach altogether. What happens over here at this particular time is a tremendous change in what? What part of him?
Ego.
All of a sudden is a tremendous infusion of ego. What's the ego over here? The ego of the conqueror. It's a time of victory, the conqueror. And what is the whole essence of the conqueror? That he could take whatever he wants. That's his whole... So that is the situation over here. See, that's why this is different than the case of Chazir. You see? The case of Chazir, I mean, that's the usual situation. A person has taiva, right? And then he has the other forces. He has ego ideal, he has his chachma, he has to grapple with it. The Torah is not matir. You see? But what's unique about this particular situation is that over here he can't fight it. See, why can't he fight it? Because that agency within him, right, which normally is supposed to be watching him and holding him, now that very agency is fooling him, is pulling him the other way. So he's totally lost. That's why, like Dibra Torah Ela Keneged Yetzer Hara. You see? Because it's impossible. If the Torah would have told him not to do it, he would do it anyway. Because here he's lacking one of the mechanisms. See? In the other case, when he has the mechanisms, a person has to struggle with it. The Torah's not going to be matir. You have an individual case where a person, that's in the story. So a person just lost control, right? It wasn't free will and he ate chazir. That's not a story. That's something different, you see? But the Torah doesn't matir it. What's unique about this is that over here, he's lacking that mechanism, you see? The mechanism which normally protects him is now, on the contrary, distorting him. Alright? By Basar normally. In other words, we said that there are many things in the Torah that that a person is really supposed to separate himself from. The Torah allows you to have it. So why don't we say over the Elah Dibra Torah? Like by Basar, you see? Why don't we say over the Elah Dibra Torah? What's different about this? You see? You hear the question, Rabbi? Yes, that was one of the questions we asked the Chachila. It's true that the purpose is to elevate a person, right? But the Torah recognizes that a man has certain needs. Those are legitimate, regular needs, you see? And so therefore, if a person would just try and... the only way that you can really raise yourself is by steps. And a person has to have a certain amount of physical enjoyment, you see? So that's part of what the person needs. The Torah allowed him to have what he needs, you see? But this is different. This is not really one of his needs. He doesn't really need this particular woman. He could live without it. But the only thing is that now his mind has been totally distorted, so he thinks he needs this particular thing. If he could, right? If he was capable of really looking at the situation in his true perspective, he'd see it's not one of his needs. You see? So that's the Chalei Dibret Torah Kineged Yetzirah. In the other cases, right? That there is a certain amount of need a person has. Each person has his own particular. But whatever it is, it's legitimate. A person has to have a certain amount. You follow? That's fine. But so that's one category. But this is an entirely different situation. Because here there is no real need. You see what I'm saying? Here it's a total distortion in his own perspective, which has come about because of his new infusion with ego. That's a totally different kind of thing. Alright? So now we understand the whole parsha of like Dibra Tera Kineged Yetzirah. Now we have two more questions over here. This should be should be quick. First question is, why will this cause him to hate her? Of course, Chazal don't mean to say that every case he's going to hate her. It means that there's a certain connection over there. You can have plenty of cases where he didn't hate her, but they're pointing something out. There is a certain cause and effect here. What's going to... It's really something that he doesn't need, you see? And if it's... You see, the thing is, right, Chait mentioned when he said it, that depends on the level of the guy. If the guy's in a low level, then he probably won't wind up hating her. If the guy's in a higher level, he probably will. Because, you see, if a guy's in a low level, he probably won't notice any difference in his life. Like he's married to a shiksa, or married to a Jewish girl. If a person's in a higher level, because this can happen to a person on a higher level. So then what's going to happen is, as he goes away from this situation, and he starts living with her, he's going to really see that it's wrong, that it's not working. It's a bad thing. Right? Now what's going to happen over there? So once he senses that something is wrong, then he's going to hate her. Why is he going to hate her? How do you have that? You see, this guy does have what? He has a tendency towards ego over here, right? I mean, it's true he's going to go away from the situation, but the ego is still there. You follow? We don't mean to say he's going to go back and become humble. Now, what happens is, what happens to a person with ego when he notices that there's something wrong? He has problems, right, with his wife. It's not a good marriage, you see? Now, really, who's the true cause of the problem? He himself. It's his fault, right? He shouldn't have done it. But we know there's a certain mechanism called projection. Egotism prevents a person from what? From blaming himself. Instead of blaming himself, he's going to project the thing onto her. You see? Because you have to explain why he's going to hate her. Really, so she represents, she's a symbol. But if you're an intelligent person, she's not the cause. You're the cause. It's your problem. The answer is the egotism, that very egotism which led to the hate in the first place, right, will prevent him from acknowledging that he's to blame, and instead he'll project it onto her, which is the case in most cases if you have problems like this. Chazal say, kala posel, mimumo posel. Kala posel, whoever is posel, goes around poseling. In other words, someone who goes around criticizing. Excessive criticism. I mean, if there's legitimate criticism, like the kind that I give, then there's excessive. You see? Then there's excessive. They're never satisfied. Mimumo paisel. What does it mean? From their own mum. It's their own blemish. That, in other words, that it's really, if you'll search into the situation, you'll find 9 out of 10 times that what? That they have that very same defect that they are projecting onto others. It's a very interesting point. Kala paisel, mimumo paisel. So therefore, what do you see from this? That explains the second factor. That the seifa l'sainai. See, Chazal tremendous insight over here. Now, what's the last point that we have to... eventually, yeah. How is it to work? Is Ben Saramora. What's causing the Ben Saramora? Why? The hatred, you see? That's what we have to look for. Not in the fact of his... because according to you, really, step one alone would cause it. It's the fact that there's a hatred between husband and wife. That is the key thing. Now, how does that factor produce a Ben Saramora? Here's a real deep insight into psychology. What? Chazal say like this. that, let's understand. In other words, the premise is that if there's a split, a hatred between man and wife, it's going to produce rebellious children, right? So therefore, you have to infer the opposite, that the precondition for proper raising of a child is unity, right? Between, all right, now how do we see this? You see, we just did it the other day. There's two psukim in the Torah. It says by kaved, it says kaved es avicha v'yesimecha, right? But then that's by respect and honor. By honor it says honor your father and your mother. So your father is mentioned first. But it says in the other pasuk, by fearing them, ish, what goes first? Imo v'yaviv tiro. So there, put the mother before the father. So that's the old question, Chazal, you know, why by kaved is the father first? Why by fear is the mother first? So what's the answer? So Chazal say like this, yeah. In other words, that there's a natural inclination in the child, who is he more inclined to honor and respect? Who? The mother, yeah, the mother. And who is he more, so therefore, since he's more inclined to give honor to his mother, so the Torah had to stress that you have to give honor to your father too. So that's why the father is mentioned first. Now, in the other case, by fear, who is he more inclined to fear? That's the father. Father. So therefore, the mother was stressed first. Now, what is the reason for this? Why is there the... Yeah, no, but why is it psychologically so? Why is there more of a natural inclination to honor the mother and to fear the father? Because simply... you're right. In parenting. This is, fellas, what's that? No joking right now. You say, shh. Upbringing, there are two functions in the upbringing of the child. One is to be makar of the child, right, with love, with positive incentive, all the positive approach. Shh. See? And the other one, of course, you have to have a certain amount of discipline, you see, of suppression, of the factor of fear, whatever it is. I'm just giving you a general outline. Now, in reality, of course, each parent, right, will do some of both. But what is the prototype? In other words, if you're going to, which one represents which in terms of the prototype? So normally, right, the way you know, it's been constructed, the way the disposition of a father and a mother is that the mother usually, right, will represent the love, the positive, right? And the father is more of the negative, you see?
Oh.
Yeah, disciplinarian. All right. Now, so the thing is like this. So therefore, we see that there's a more of a natural feeling in the child to love which parent? To love the mother, right? And to rebel against the father. Because I'll say, why? Why does he rebel against the father? Neshim alam bei Torah. Because he teaches them Torah. That means, you know, he holds instincts in check and he forced them to follow the right path. Ah. So therefore, we see that in every child, there is already the possibility of rebellion. Why? Because it's a natural thing. Every person, this is a natural phenomenon. Every child has to go through a certain amount of rebellion. Because that's the natural way man develops. He has instincts, right? And then in the course of his upbringing, those instincts are being suppressed. So he starts to rebel. Ah. So normally the child rebel against his father, because the father is the one that suppresses the instincts. Ah. Now what is the factor over here that saves the situation in a normal case? That prevents the child from developing into that the rebellion becomes dissipated, you know, and becomes channeled into the correct path. What takes care, how is the factor of rebellion normally solved in the usual situation? What's that? When the child, let's say, is rebuked by the father, right? Okay. He loves the mother. And he's rebuked by the father. So he feels a feeling of rebellion. So what's his first instinct? What does he do? Who does he run to? Runs to the mother. Because he feels that the mother is going to support him. But when he sees that the mother and father are united, they're together, so then he has to get rid of the rebellion. Because he has no out. You see? In other words, the mother who he loves reinforces the father, right? You see? So he can't use the argument that, he doesn't like me, he hates me. You see? And he has no way out. I mean, it's if you're going to love the mother, you have to accept the father too, because they're one. You see, he doesn't want to give up the love of his mother. So therefore, in other words, he has no basis to build that rebellion on. It stopped right at that particular point. And then he has to accept the reality. That's the reality. I have to change myself. The seed of rebellion is there in every case. But the question is, will that rebellion be able to develop into a Ben Sor Amora, or will it be quelled? That depends on one factor. If you have the father and mother together, because, and especially so, the one that he loves, you see, will be completely united with the one that's giving him this one. Then he has no choice. You see, then he has no choice. You see, by the way, in a different sense, you see this all the time, in other words, by, in many cases, let's say somebody you know, rebukes you for something, right? But you're not that much of a friend, right? So you have to say, well, he doesn't like me, this and that. Then let's say I get somebody that you really like, and he tells you the same thing, then you'll accept it, because that person really loves me. You see? That's the normal psychology. You see? Ah. You have a tremendous insight in terms of Chazal over here, into human nature. That's the third step. Over here, they are separated. They hate each other. So what happens? So the father is trying to raise the child. He rebukes him. You see? What happens when the child's rebuked? Runs to the mother. But now will the mother stand together? No, the mother hates the guy. All you see, there's hatred between them. They're not united. So then in other words, the child has an out, in other words, to side with one parent against the other parent. And that's exactly what happens, you see? And very often the parents will use the child as a weapon against the other one they dislike, you see?
Always.
You see? Ah. When that occurs, the unity is broken. Once the unity is broken, then the child has an outlet for the rebellion, you see? The only way to quell that rebellion is through the unity of the parents. Once that's broken, the outlet is there. So what happens? He goes on and on. And that's how you develop men's own love, because there was never any situation in which that rebellion was quelled. Of Ufruf. He had just come back from the summer. And he said he'd worked it out, so he stayed at that particular time. That you have to understand what causes a guy to... What causes a guy? You see? What causes the guy? This particular mechanism really has tremendous effect in many areas. I don't only mean in terms of the tivus per se that a guy runs after, and which takes him out of learning. In terms of so many, even in choice of profession and everything. In other words, where a guy sees that practically speaking, he could make a living in a different way and have all his needs, but he has to go on and he has to be the doctor. He has to be this. He has to be that. And he confuses it. You know, a lot of times he confuses in his mind what the real thing is over there. You see.
What are you
going to get? Realize yourself. Shh. You see, it's true. It's true that there is a certain amount that a person has to have for enjoyment, emotional enjoyment, you see? And that's legitimate. But very often people make a mistake in judging the correct amount. Sometimes it's they think they need more and more and more. And you got to be very careful about that. And also you should try and make the distinction between where it's a legitimate need for something and where it's just part of a separate ideal that you're pursuing. That's a different point. Once you're aware of it, you have consciousness of it, you see, then you can deal with it. That's what happened over there. When he became aware, right, that he had this particular ideal, then he could deal with it. And once he had dealt with it, then he was okay. So this is a tremendous, there's a tremendous insight, a tremendous insight. I'm not going to go into all the practical ramifications, because it's enough for one day. Alright?
You just touched on something.
Ah. See? Mechemes Rishon is for conquest. You see? So that's when the guy has the ego of the conqueror. But Mechemes Mitzvah he's doing for Mitzvah. You see? And moreover, usually Mechemes Mitzvah, for example, is like self-defense. Right? So then, if it's self-defense, he's not going out to be the conqueror. He's just defending himself. And even though, like, killing the Shiva Mammon, he's doing it for the sake of Mitzvah. He says he's not doing it for the sake of conquest. So the fact that it's for Mitzvah will contain it. But in Rechavos Rishus, then that's where the danger comes out. Because it's inherently for the sake of conquest.